This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey up, everybody. My name's Joshua Morrison, director of Johnny Mozza's Lessons in Confidence. Today, I want to talk to you a little bit about an old film that I did called Cheap and Easy Meditative Efficiency. It was this sci-fi kind of thing that I wrote originally for a 48-hour film festival in 2018. Our attempt at making a film in 48 hours completely fell flat. And I kind of took the idea that we wrote because I kind of liked what was going on with the whole dystopian 1984 Brave New World sort of thing that we were building up. And I kind of wanted to expand it into something else and to make a bit of a philosophical, psychological kind of thing about the idea of people that are living in a dystopia that are happy with the dystopia they're actually living in and they don't want change. And I kind of thought there might be something interesting within that idea. And so I spent this time writing this 15-page script and then getting it done, filmed, and then released. And the idea was to make a quite high-quality thing, as high-quality as I could make at that present moment. I'd just come off of finishing my first real short film, which is called Michael's Lives. And looking back at it, I'm not very happy with it. At the time, I remember really enjoying it. And I remember there being a lot of fun experimentation and stuff like that, particularly within the filmmaking itself. There was this idea that Michael had these flashes that were going on because of the medication that he was taking that caused like false memories to come in, and like the memories started messing around with his own subconscious. And that's a very weird idea to actually get across in the idea in a film. I feel like it would have worked better in a book or something like that. But I look back at that film and I kind of cringe a little bit. But, you know, it was the first thing that I ever did properly. It's a 27-minute goddamn short. I mean, no short has any excuse being that long, particularly if it's your first one that's being filmed on a Nikon D3100. And, you know, with no real, like, microphones or anything like that, a lot of it's camera audio or, like, one boom audio that I got from college, one boom mic that I got from college. And I was using my friends for cameramen and actors and all that sort of stuff. And so we had a blast actually working on the film together. And it was a fun project. And I'm really glad that I actually went and did it. But I look back at it and I've semi-disowned it. I'm glad that I did it. But I'm not glad that I spent as long as I did working on it and trying to perfect it. I almost wish that I'd just spent the month on it and then just shat it out almost. And then after Michael's Lives, I started working on this film called Cheap and Easy Meditative Efficiency, which is a name that everyone told me to not call it that. And I quite vehemently was sticking with that name, and I still like that name. It's still, to me, that is what the film is about. It's about the idea of meditative efficiency. So the idea of getting into a meditative state in an efficient sort of manner. So it's combining the holistic sort of nature of the oneself within a larger, grander context of finding yourself in this bigger world, mixed with the idea of commodifying your life into a series of numbers and statistics and that kind of thing. And I thought those two themes worked quite well together and they gelled quite interestingly. But even with that film, when that came out, I kind of look back on it and I think I don't think I conveyed that theme particularly well within the film. I feel like it's a little bit vague and a little bit just pretentious. And I feel like when you're just starting out, right, when you're making your first film or you're making your first thing, it can be very easy to get lost in your own mind and your own brain with your own ideas that you think are super complex and super interesting. But then you will come back in years to come and realise that they're not actually all that. They're not actually as groundbreaking as you thought they were. I mean, I thought I was doing something original, and it was only sort of in the editing process I realised that I had just completely ripped off 1984 and Brave New World and just sort of bammed them together and just released that as a product, as basically a student film where I wasn't a student anymore. And you know what? I am glad that I did the project, and I still think it holds up on a technical level. The sound's all right. The visuals are pretty nice. The acting, I think, is quite good. Overall, there's some quite fun little moments in there and vignettes woven throughout the narrative. There's a lot of fun going on with regards to who this main character, who's called Joe3585, and how he sort of goes from having this chip in the brain that gives him this automative state to him sort of self-actualizing a little bit, and the consequences that come from that, from a tyrannical government trying to put a stop to that. And you know, it was all a little bit naive and a little bit sort of teenagery, but you know, I was a teenager when I made it, so I can only say that I was glad that I did it the way that I did it, because it is my film and I do own that film in that sense. I mean, obviously I literally own it, but I mean in the sense I own what I made, and I'm glad that I made it, and I wouldn't have made it any other way. And there was a few different ways. I mean, we shot it over 4 days, 3 main days, and then we did another day a bit later where I got my friend Lee, my friend Gesm, and my friend Jake to come down alongside John Henry Westhead, who plays Joe3585. And we had this quite fun scene where their characters, Lee, Jake, and Gesm, are all kind of talking about, like, oh yeah, you managed to do 4,000 boxes in an hour. Well, I managed to do 4,500, so I'm better than you. And, you know, you just aren't even getting your work done. At least I can just sit around and gab on, but I get more done than you, and you're actually trying to work. And they were having this little argument, and it was almost like Mean Girls of the warehouse workplace a little bit. And that was kind of fun. And they also end up beating him up, and that ends up sort of getting him to semi-wake up a little bit. He's also got this holographic, girlfriend that's bought off of the marketplace, and everyone turns out has one of these wives. And he used to smoke, and it turns out everyone quit smoking at the exact same time because they updated the chips in everyone's brains to just make them so that they wouldn't smoke anymore. And I don't know if I'm actually making any sense with what I'm saying right now, because I don't think the film itself necessarily conveys all these ideas coherently. But I think when you're just starting out, it's important to try and not make the same mistake that I made, which is trying to cover these really grand and overarching themes with very limited resources. And more importantly than limited resources, limited know-how. And understand your naivety and own your naivety and use your naivety to your advantage and make a naive film, a youthful exploit, as it were. So after I did that, I wanted to make a more immature film on purpose, right? So I made a feature film called Sheffield Psychedelic, and the idea of that one was that it follows this sort of youngish sort of 17, 18-year-old lad who then gets caught up in the underworld of Sheffield, as it were, and he starts getting into a world that's a bit in over his head, and his dad's a bit controlling, and his home life is a little bit miserable. Not like in a like abusive way or like really awful stuff, but just kind of just dead and like awkward and that kind of thing. And I was sort of drawing from films that I was enjoying at that time, like Dead Man's Shoes, and I can't remember what the other one was called that was set in Scotland, and stuff like This Is England. It was a very northern feeling film, and I wanted to capture that northern sense to the world of Sheffield, and I wanted to make sure that the town itself was a character almost in the film. And you know what? I came out of that film and I looked at it, and it's not, I still like it quite a lot, and I think it's a fucking hilarious film actually. And I did set out to make it a bit of a comedy, but I feel like as you make each film, you will look back and you will see things that are wrong with your past creations that you try and fix with your new creations. And then once you've made your new creations and you've moved on to the next thing, at that point in your life, you're going to look back and you're going to sort of think, oh, wow, I didn't quite understand what I was doing there and I didn't quite do that right and I would have done this a bit differently. But I think you should avoid getting in over your head about overanalyzing and being overly critical and overly cynical of your past works, because you've learned these lessons. If you're able to look at your old stuff and say these things about them, it means that you're not going to make those same mistakes again. And to be honest, they're not even necessarily mistakes, because these are things that you will notice because you know what your original vision was and how the end product sort of diverged from that original vision and became its own thing. Right, and you're just there trying to harness this energy of the project that you're working on to try and make it what you want, and it kind of wants to be its own thing. And you're kind of wrestling with this film to try and, or album or whatever it might be that you're making in this moment, to try and make it what you want, and it wants to be what it wants to be. And I think that sort of duet is what's really important with regards to these low budget, no budget indie films and albums made by people in their bedrooms and all that kind of stuff, is that you don't have full control over everything. So I feel like if you're just starting out, try and avoid doing what I did, which is to try and make these lofty, quite pretentious, quite over the top sort of things, and focus more on the simplistic and the fun, and make something that's enjoyable and entertaining first rather than thought provoking and all that sort of stuff second, because you're still young, you're still naive, you don't know everything yet. And I think you even kind of know that a little bit, but you kind of shove that little part out of your brain so that you can be the artiste, the visionary that has this idea, because you have these lofty ideas of your own future and your own aspirations and that kind of thing. And you want to get to somewhere, and you're using these films or these projects as stepping stones to get yourself to that point. Because the bigger your backlog is, the more experience you have, the better you will become over time. And you will only learn by doing. Your first film will never be your best one. It will never, ever be your best one, unless you somehow won the lottery of creativity. And it would almost be a curse in the way if your first thing you ever made was your best and you're constantly trying to get to that same thing again. You're constantly trying, you can never quite make it. And I just mean in terms of quality. I don't necessarily mean in terms of outward reception or external validation and success that might come from driving viewer engagement or maybe getting into film festivals and all that sort of stuff. I'm talking more about your own appreciation of your past works. So all your past stuff is what brings you to the person that you are today as a creative. And who you are today wouldn't be who you are if you hadn't made these things that maybe now you look back on at with, and you're not quite proud of it anymore. You wouldn't be here if it weren't for those things. And you won't be where you are in the future if not for the stuff that you're doing now. If you don't finish what you're doing now, then you will never be that person in the future that you hope to be, which is what you're always driving and striving to be. Even when you're maybe down, you feel like it's all impossible and you're close to giving up. If you don't give up and you just keep pushing and you just force yourself a little bit, even when it feels difficult, you will eventually complete whatever this thing is, move on to the next thing and complete that, and then move on to the next thing. And the more you do that, the better you will get. The increase in your trajectory of talent will just, the leaps of talent that you will bound through will become larger and larger and larger, and you will just get better and better and better. Even if, from an outsider's point of view, people might not be super fond of what you're doing, or they might think your old stuff was better. If you're still trying earnestly, you will be getting better no matter what, because you've got the experience of where you were, you've learnt the lessons, and you're applying those lessons. And as long as you're applying those lessons and making sure that you're not repeating the same mistakes that you made before, then you will be on a journey to success no matter what. So with this cheap and easy meditative efficiency film, I think I'm going to upload it to this channel so that you can get a bit of a sense of what I was doing in that mindset in 2018, 2019. And that film took a long, long time to edit and finish, and I procrastinated on it for a long, long time, and it only ended up getting released in 2022 to my old channel, Morrison Productions. And I really wish that I hadn't spent quite so long just perfecting every little detail, because I never perfected it in the end, and I was never going to perfect it in the end, and there was no singular edit that would have solved all the issues. There was no magical moment that, you know, I don't have like George Lucas's wife to come in and just save me, you know, and just solve all the issues for me as a director. I need to save myself. And if it can't be saved, then it's best to complete it and push it out the way so that you can move on to newer and greener pastures. So after I did Cheap and Easy Meditative Efficiency, I took the same general narrative structure and applied it to a much simpler post-apocalyptic concept, which was basically the idea that if you're in a post-apocalypse, you shouldn't be kind to other people, because kindness will beget betrayal, essentially. And you will be betrayed if you show kindness onto other people.
This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
And that was kind of the main idea of it, but it followed a very similar plot structure, which was a little bit of preamble leading to a main dialogue scene between a hero and a villain, which covers a few different philosophical aspects before one person dies, and then that's it. That was the general sort of idea, and I managed to also refine and condense those ideas from 16 minutes originally down to 10 minutes in I Am Scum. And I think that's also kind of important, is getting your voice out there in an efficient way and not just yabbering on and hypocrite and yabbering on and just trying to make it bigger and loftier and taking super slow-paced approach to things, when you're still so new to everything that I don't think people have the patience for that the way that they might with someone like Quentin Tarantino or Christopher Nolan or whoever, that can spend 10 minutes on a scene just not really, you know, expanding on everything, but you know, they want a little bit of time to wank themselves off creatively. So don't get super in over your head. Don't allow yourself to give in to your pretentious vindictions, and just create what's fun, and create stuff that is fun for yourself, and importantly, fun for others as well. And as long as both you and the audience are having fun, then you've found something, right? And what's so brilliant about this modern day with the internet and everything is that you can get your creative works out there. If I was doing this in the 90s and I was just using like a little digicam or whatever, making films with my friends, yeah, it'd be brilliant. And I could maybe get a couple hard copies out and share them amongst my friends. And maybe my friends would hand them off to various people. Maybe one would give them to their girlfriend, and then they break up, and then the girlfriend's got it. And then she ends up giving it to her new boyfriend or whatever, and then the new boyfriend gives it to his mum or whatever, and then her mum ends up giving it to her friend or whatever, and now it's been seen by like a few different people just by this tape being passed around. Now you can bypass all of that. All of those people that I just mentioned can all see it at the exact same time, the exact same way, by getting a link and just seeing it, or just getting it appear on their YouTube recommendations or their TikTok recommendations or whatever it is you might be using. And then it's not just them, the people that are in your life and the people that are friends of your friends and your general social network. Also other people that you've never heard of before, that have no connection to you or your life or your personal self, can engage in what you're doing. If you're watching this, there's a 99% chance that we've never met, we've never interacted, and I don't know who you are. And I think the fact that you can see this and I can see what you're doing is so profoundly beautiful. The fact that we can get out there and just collaborate together in this sort of way, and leave little comments and like videos and go back to other people and go, oh wow, this one's good and this one's good and that kind of thing. So I feel like, take a look at the old stuff that you did. See what you did right, see what you did wrong. Because you did some stuff right, and your old stuff certainly holds up better than you think. I've not watched Michael's Lives now for about 4 years, but I feel like if I go back to it and watch it again now, I'll probably be a lot kinder to it then if I just continue to not watch it. So I'm not going to go back and watch it, but I feel like it's probably better than I'm letting on. And I feel like Cheap and Easy is probably better than letting on. And I feel like every film that I've made before that I'm maybe no longer proud of in that sort of sense of objective quality, I may be proud of for the fact that I actually went out and accomplished it. I went out and did it, and it's now out. And they probably hold up a lot better than I think they do. So that's generally the message, is go out there and make stuff and keep making stuff, because eventually it will be 10 years from now and you want to look back at the stuff you made 10 years ago. And the only way you're going to do that is if you get out now and do it. So thank you very much for watching this video. Please leave a comment below about some of your old work. How do you feel about it? Do you feel proud of it? Do you feel like you want to disown it? Have you unlisted it all from YouTube? Have you made sure that, have you locked off so no one can ever see it? Or do you go the opposite route and just allow people to see it as part of your overall creative journey? Let me know, and let me know what you think of your old projects. So yeah, thank you very much for watching this video, everybody. By the way, this location is actually where we filmed Summer Cheap and Easy. That's why I did this video here. This tree has actually seemed to have moved. It was actually slightly over there before. It seems to have shifted over here. I don't know how that's happened, but whatever, I suppose. It's kind of cool. There was another bit of log over there. That's disappeared as well. I don't quite understand how that happened, because they're fucking heavy. This tree, you know? I mean, it's not lightweight. It's that. I don't know if you can see it, but there's another big bit of tree just behind this big bit of tree. That big bit of tree is what the character Joe 3585, played by John Henry Westhead, sat on. And then Alaric Montgomery, he sat somewhere over there, just where the camera is, basically. And he was played by someone called Marquez. And thank you so much to both Marquez and John Henry. And also Malin Frank, who played the role of the holographic girlfriend, whose name escapes me. Danny, that was it. Danny. Or Moira, I can't remember which one it was. It was one of them. So yeah, that's basically it. That's basically the video. Thank you so much for watching this one. Sorry it's a little bit all over the place, but you've come to expect that by this point, I suppose, if you've watched more than one. And if you haven't, they're all kind of like this. So if you liked it, there's plenty more out there. There's about 150 of these videos out there. So you've got plenty to sift through if you're bored. So take care, everybody. Bye-bye. Hey up, everybody. My name's Joshua Morrison, director of Johnny Mozzles Lessons in Confidence. And today I want to talk to you about your journey with regards to making music. Now, if you're just getting into music, you're probably maybe three or four songs in, you've done a couple little things, done a couple little demos, you made a couple beats, all that kind of stuff, right? And you're looking at the next steps. You're looking at what to do after this and how to progress as a musician, etc., etc., no matter what your genre is, right? So you might have heard the old thing of your first 100 songs are going to suck. Right? And that is pretty much true. I counted the first 100 songs that I did, and it took me about a year and a half to get to 100. And even at 100, I wasn't vastly happy. I'm probably at about 400 now. And it probably took closer to about 300 songs to get to a point where I even made a song that I could consider good by my own set of standards, which are quite high. I am a bit of a perfectionist, believe it or not. But what I found when it came to making as much stuff as possible was that even some of the stuff that's in the first 100 songs is still okay. Even some of the stuff in the first 100 to 200 songs is okay. And as it gets more and more in terms of like the first 100, the second 100 and the third 100, you'll notice that the percentage of good songs increases from like 1% to 3% to 10% to 15%. You're never going to get to 100%. You're never going to make every single song be good, of high quality. You're never going to make something that's perfectly written every single time. But you will find that the success rate increases as you do more, right? So if the first 100 songs are going to suck, why not just make 100 shit songs and just get that done, get that out of the way, get that covered so that you've got your 100 songs and now you can move on and treat your 101st song as if it's your first, right? And just keep doing things like that and then do another 100 and then see what you're at by the time you're at 200 songs. And it doesn't have to take that long. If you're someone that, say, makes beats, for instance, I remember seeing a thing of a guy, he made beats where he did it in like 200 BPM and then he'd slow it down to like 100 BPM. And he was just making things really, really quickly. He was able to make a beat in about 30 seconds. It was the space of a YouTube short or a TikTok or Instagram or whatever. And he made the entire thing in that amount of time. So what's that, 1 minute per beat? So 100 minutes would mean 100 beats. Give yourself maybe 200 minutes because you're going to want a bit of a break. But obviously I'm being a bit facetious with this. You don't have to make 100 songs in 2 hours. But I feel like you can make 100 songs much, much faster than you might be intending to. At the rate that you're currently going at the moment, you might be making songs that you're not too happy with. I mean, you can listen to them and you can enjoy them, but you know that you've got a lot of growing to do. So why not just force that growth? Because it's not like growing as a literal human being, like in terms of height, where you don't really have any control over what height you become. But in terms of music, you do have control over how much music you can create. So why not make more of it? It doesn't all have to be good. Recently, I made an album in a day. It was called 12 Hours of Stubbornness, right? And it's on Bandcamp, it's coming to Spotify and Apple Music, and it might actually already be on all those platforms, and it's on YouTube as well. It's 7 songs that I made in the space of a day, right? And I'm not gonna act like any of them are like really good songs or anything like that, but that's 7 songs done in one day that wouldn't have been done otherwise, right? So you can make stuff quite quickly, much quicker than you actually think that you can. And it's good to do things that way. It's good to make stuff fast whilst you're still learning and developing and growing. You don't necessarily have to publish them, but there's no harm in doing so. The internet is a huge ocean of content and people trying to get their name out there. And you'll just be another speck in that big sea. And if you can find some success learning and developing and growing and finding an audience that connects with that, then why not? Is the way that I would see it. And if you're trying to make music and you're trying to get to that place where you want to be, you've probably got inspirations, like influences from some of your favorite artists in a variety of genres. You know, you might want to make a combination of this and a combination of that with a little sprinkle of this, all kind of put together to create the thing that is you with that little magic dash of whatever you actually is. So why not just make as much of it as you can while you can, all right? Because if you're starting out, you have an outsider's perspective. Say if you're still learning a DAW, say if you haven't even progressed to a DAW yet and you're making stuff in Audacity, say if you barely know how to play your instrument, say if you barely know how to like mix and master and all this stuff, you can learn by doing. And I think a lot of people do learn by doing rather than learning by studying. It's much better to make 100 songs and have them all be shit and then go and make your next 100 songs than it is to study all the music theory and study everything there is in the world and how to make everything properly and then spend 10 years crafting and perfecting these 100 songs. Because, yeah, if you do all that, you will probably end up with 100 songs that are generally better quality than if you just shat them out with no experience and no knowledge or anything like that. But it doesn't mean that you can't just make your next 100 songs and your next 100 songs and your next 100 songs after that and just keep going like that. As I said, I'm on about song 400 probably at the moment, probably actually a fair bit higher, but I'm only counting songs that I actually released. I'm not counting the multiple takes of various songs. I'm not counting the random times that I just got like a guitar over a backing track. I'm not counting the 30 different covers of Noise Hallow Gallo that I did. I'm not counting any of that sort of stuff. So you could really expand that number much, much higher, as can you with whatever your projects are at the moment. You've got way more stuff than you actually think you do. If you look back through some of your old backlog and you look at some of the old project files that you got, and you'll probably find a couple songs that you just completely forgot about. That just, you listen to it and you're like, fucking hell, this is all right, this. Like, it's not, I'm not going to act like it's brilliant. There's a reason I didn't release it, but not bad at all. Yeah, keep doing that, and you can just keep going and keep making it. And that's really all I have to say. This is just an encouragement unto you to go forth and just make music. Just make something, because it's a lot easier than it looks. It's a lot easier to make 100 songs, and you can do it a lot more quickly than you might think. And once you get that 100 songs out of the way, then you will be in a better position to move forwards with your, not necessarily music career, but even if you're just treating it as a hobby like I am, you've got a much better position to go forwards with the songs that you're going to make and with your artistic intention. And as you continue, you will hone in your craft, you'll hone in your sound and who you are amongst the general wider music landscape, and you'll be able to make something of yourself. Maybe not in a, you know, fundamental analytical sort of success, the core definitions of success in a materialist capitalistic sort of way, but you will be able to look at your little backlog, your 100 songs, and obviously some of them will be kind of crap. Maybe even 80, maybe even 99 of them will be crap, but one of them will be good. At least one will be good. Probably 3 or 4 or 5 or 6.
This podcast is supported by The Real Real. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The Real Real.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The Real Real? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell. Fast. To our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The Real Real than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The Real Real. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Maybe more, depending on how lucky you are. It really is a luck of the draw, because each song you make is essentially throwing a dart at the dartboard. And all you're going to do is get better at playing darts. And eventually you'll become like one of those lads on Bullseye with a pint in his hand going like, triple 20, triple 20, 180. So you can just do that. You can just go out and make stuff now. You don't have to deliberate. You don't need to craft something perfect. And you shouldn't try and craft something perfect, because what you'll find if you do that, like I have multiple times, is that you'll spend all this time and all this energy and all this mental capacity on this one project that will start to linger over your head like a big cloud that constantly rains on you, and you'll be wandering around kind of irritated that you can never get this thing exactly how you envision it. And it's going to come out at a certain point and you'll move on, and it will just become another thing that you did that doesn't feel any higher quality than everything else that you put out there. So what I would say to you is just not to worry so much about the music that you're trying to make. Just make it, because 100 songs is really not that many, okay? It's 10 times 10. And if I was able to make 7 songs in a day, say if you did 7 of those in the space of a month, that's 70 in 1 month. And then you could probably do the other 30 the next month. I'm obviously just spitting numbers out right now. You can maybe do it over the course of 1 year. It doesn't necessarily need to take a long, 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 long time. You know, you look at, say, I don't know, whatever band you like that has maybe 6, 7 albums, and you count the amount of songs that they've got plus all the bonus tracks, and it comes out to maybe 88. You're not considering that with that band, all of those members of that band have got huge backlogs of stuff on hard drives somewhere out there, various demos, various like little nuggets of songs that never went anywhere because they kept throwing darts at the wall, and eventually they found success with a certain thing. And now they're restarting their 100 songs and doing the new 100 songs, and now they'll be amazing after they've hit 100 songs. So if you make 100 songs, maybe make 150 songs and then reset it. And then go reset your counter back to 0 songs, and then just make another 100, and then reset your counter. Because as you move through your music, I'm going to call it career, I just mean in terms of your skill and ability as a musician, as a player of an instrument, as a maker of beats, you will go through phases. You'll have some times when you're making heavier stuff, you'll have some time where you'll go through a big phase of maybe making lo-fi kind of stuff, or you have a phase where you do instrumentals, or a phase where you try and start singing and you realize you can't sing. You'll have all these different phases. You might have a phase where you get like maybe a new keyboard or something for Christmas, and you just start spending all your time messing around with it, and you make loads of stuff out of that. You'll have phases, so make use of those phases and use and count it from 0 when you realize you're in a new phase, because you'll know inherently deep down, even if it's not obvious from the music, from an outsider's perspective, from your perspective, looking at your own work, you'll be able to see where one chapter ends and the next begins. And it's up to you to write that chapter, get it to a nice cohesive sort of quality, get it done, and then close the book on that chapter, turn the page, and then begin again and again and again, and just keep trying that. And that's all you really need to do, is just keep trying, keep throwing the dart at the wall, keep being yourself, keep putting the true expressions of your own soul into your music. And whether it's you want to publish it, or you want to keep it private, or maybe you want to play open mics in your local area, or whatever, there can come no harm from making more stuff. So thank you very much for watching this video. I hope you have a good rest of the day. Hope everything's sort of working out well for you. And if tell me what song number you're at. How many songs have you made at this point? Let me know. And let me know what kind of how happy you are with your skill at the moment. How far do you feel you need to progress to get to the point where you would be happy and content with your skill? Because, I mean, even once you get to that point, you'll still not be happy. Like, the point that I'm at with regards to my music, if me from 3 years ago came and had a chat with me now, and I showed him a couple of my new songs that 3 years away from him ever being able to make, he'd look at them and go, Jesus Christ, you're a bloody genius. And I'd be like, no, I'm not. And then similarly, if me from 3 years in the future came along and showed me a song that I'm going to make 3 years in the future, I'd look at him and go, fucking hell, man. You're a wizard. And then him, 3 years in the future, another version of me would come and chat to the version of me 3 years in the future. So the version of me 6 years in the future has a chat from me 3 years in the future. And it's the same thing again and again and again, because you're constantly improving, you're constantly refining your craft. Everyone is always trying new things and new experiments, even the greats. You know, like David Gilmour recently, like in the past sort of 10 years or so, he started using Ableton Live. He did a project with The Orb. He's been getting himself out there and doing weird little things. You got other various musicians. I don't know, like Paul McCartney, for instance, he had loads of little like side projects and stuff. He had Wings, and then he had that, the techno-y IDM sort of band that he had. And then he did weird little experiments, and he's done like 18 albums at this point, and he's constantly trying new things. Neil Young is always experimenting with new weird little sounds. And it's good to do that. And it's always good to just keep making more stuff, because no harm can come from it. There's not like the content police are going to come knock at your door saying, sorry, sir, you've made too many songs. We need to arrest you on account of creation. I don't know. Do you get my point? Is that you can make stuff. You can make stuff of low quality, and you can just keep trying. Just keep trying, and eventually you'll get there. So thank you so much for watching this video. Have a good rest of the day. Yeah, leave your comments about what song, how many songs have you made at this point, and what do you want to do next? Let me know. Have a good rest of the day. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye. Ooh. A load of fog over you around now, but then, as time goes on, you figure out more of what the world is, you clear that fog. Obviously, I can't clear the fog in real life, but I can clear the fog in my mind, right? So, yeah, these videos are some kind of trend. There's a few of them. There's a few channels that do this kind of thing. I've done a video talking about a couple of them, like just shouting out small channels, because I thought that'd be a nice little thing to do, I guess. And, you know, it's the sort of thing that's just kind of odd, because it made me think, hang on, if this is a trend, that means that at some point the trend will be not trendy anymore, and the next thing will be the trend. And I never wanted to be trendy in the first place, so should I just keep doing it and then let myself become irrelevant? Or at some point, will the trend move and I need to move with the trend? I don't quite know. But like, something needs to come of it, because, you know, I want to keep doing these videos. I really enjoy doing these videos. I'm not going to stop doing these kind of videos, even if like some new trend comes around. I might give that trend a go. I don't know what the trend would be. I think the last trend was like the skits on YouTube. You know, like you'd have, say, like maybe it'd be me, and then it'd be me with a wig on, so like me as a woman, right? And like it'd be like, oh, hey, baby, do you want to go and get some food? And then the woman in me would be like, oh, I can't pick a place to eat. And it'd be like, haha, typical women. They don't know where they want to eat. Us, unlike us men, who always know where we want to eat. Please like and subscribe. Like that was like the last trend. I've kind of taken the piss out of it a little bit. And then this is the current trend, just people yabbering on about things that they're really not equipped to discuss, like what I'm doing. And then whatever the next trend will be kind of interesting. I mean, like, I've been quite worried about people's attention spans as of late, and doing these videos and seeing the engagement and the audience retention that these videos get, which is actually quite high, really made me feel a lot more comforted, because TikTok and like YouTube Shorts and all that feels like it's really wrecking people's minds, and it feels like it's getting in the way and intruding on what the collective experience of entertainment is all about. And it's becoming this thing of just like, oh, ha, have you seen this video? Ding, 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 ding. I'm doing like sound effects in the video, and then there'll be like Subway Surfers on the bottom and all that sort of stuff. And that's a little bit irritating, you know. And that's becoming more and more prevalent. And, you know, that's just now. Think about what's going to be the case in 20 years for that kind of material. The same way that CGI looked a bit weird in 1992, but it looks fine in 2012. And, you know, but then what ended up happening is we got too comfortable with it. We got too reliant on it. And now CGI doesn't look as good now as it did 10 years ago. And that's not because the technology hasn't improved. It's because we as a, like, community industry have gotten complacent with using CGI rather than what it was before, where it was like, well, this technology isn't that good, so we need to use it sparingly. But now it's like, oh, the technology is fine, so we can use it as much as we want. And that's cool that we have the technology, and at some point we'll get the quality back because the technology will improve so much that we can just be reliant on it in that way. But, you know, I feel like trends are interesting because, like, at the moment the trend is this talking sort of thing, but then, and I know the audience for this is probably people that, like, maybe feel like they think deeper than other people. I'm not saying that to insult you, because you probably already know that you do that. I'm just sort of saying it as, like, that's what the core audience is, rather than, like, I don't imagine there's many people that are into, like, you know, like the Andrew Tate sort of stuff, or like, you know, that screamy sort of like reactionary sort of stuff. I don't think people that watch my videos necessarily come from that kind of thing, which I'm kind of glad about. But they're so inherently different, because that's very loud and energetic. And what I do is a lot more sort of almost sedated. You know, I think people watch these sort of videos to maybe make themselves feel a bit more relaxed or comforted. And I really hope people aren't doing it trying to, like, you know, because they haven't got any friends or whatever, because, like, if you're doing that, like, I can't be your friend, really. Like, you already know, like, about parasocial relationships because you use the internet, and that's been a buzzword as of the past couple of years. And it's a buzzword that is really important, and I think it's actually a really good buzzword that's taken off, because I think it's made people a lot more aware about how predatory the practice of a YouTuber or creator almost manipulating their audience into doing certain things can be. Like, you know, we've got so many different examples of that. Like, I'm just trying to think of a good one. I think in terms of changing the entire modicum of culture has been a goal almost of some YouTubers. And I think they have succeeded in that. Like, I think Andrew Tate's a good example, because I fucking hate him, but he's everywhere and I can't escape him. And when I go on my phone, he appears on my phone, and that all happened over a few months. And like the followers and the fans were spreading his bloody idiotic message all over the place, and you couldn't move for it. And that, as a result, got the people that didn't really mind to latch on. And now, as a result, not just of him, but of like the whole kind of reactionary alt-right kind of thing that kind of came before that, you know, we've started to see a regression in like cultural social issues because of these YouTubers. And obviously their wishes are then like reflected in the audience, because the audience attaches to them, and like these people get really successful. So the fact that they're so successful means that their message is resonating with people, and the fact that their message is resonating with so many people means that politicians then use these audiences for like voter bait, essentially, to then go and push their own idiotic, disgusting practices forward, like banning abortion and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, I shouldn't really, normally these videos talk like try and be more neutral and don't like just randomly discuss like dark shit like that. But like this is the thing though, is I feel like it's important to just be yourself and not be someone that isn't you, right? Because that's why these videos I think have taken off, because I am basically just talking the way that I would talk to normal people. Obviously, I'm being a bit more presentary about it, but these are my real thoughts, my real opinions, and they're opinions that have been formed based on conversations I've had with my friends and family that have led me to consider a point and then figure out how to verbalize it and then do this. Like, I don't do a script or anything like that. I've got my phone in front of me now, but it's kind of just to see how long the video is going to be, because like, if it ends up getting too long, I'll sort of go, right, let's wrap it up.
This podcast is supported by The Real Real. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The Real Real.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The Real Real? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The Real Real than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The Real Real. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
But I noticed that a lot of people are appreciating what I'm doing, and like I get a lot of really, really pleasant comments, and I feel bad for not responding to all of them. Like, but at the same time, I can't really respond to all of them. Like, I got about 200 while I was asleep. I would still be there responding to all of them. I mean, I'm sure I could copy paste, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, but like at that point, you don't really want that. Like, say if I wrote to someone and I really put my passion into it because like I like them, right? And they just said thank you. I wouldn't like that. I've done it a couple times and it's felt a little bit grim, you know. So yeah. But then on terms of the trend thing, I don't want this to be a trend that I just follow, ride or die. And I don't want to just be the guy that does just these videos, right? If this stops working, if people stop like caring about this stuff, I'm going to experiment with new forms and ideas. And the same way that like Joel Haver, he didn't just do the animation thing, right? I don't want to just do this. I'm meant to be making a film, right? Johnny Moz's Lessons in Confidence. That's like, that's not this. This series isn't called Johnny Moz's Lessons in Confidence. The film is called Johnny Moz's Lessons in Confidence, and it's about a wannabe rock star who pretends like he's playing at Glastonbury when actually he's just playing at random open mics, right? In like Chesterfield or some bloody place that no one's ever heard of. So what I want to do is start making that film properly. So I might figure out some way of getting some of these videos and keep doing the videos and stuff like that, because I really enjoy them and I want, you know, this audience to continue to grow, and I want to find more topics to discuss, and I want to raise more discussion, because there's some really fun discussion going on in the comments, which helps me to figure out where I'm right and wrong on certain points, and helps me to figure out various things. Like, it almost is a parasocial relationship, and for now that's a wholesome parasocial relationship, but the more this channel grows, the less wholesome that's going to become, and the more of a problem it's going to become. And I feel like I shouldn't really just like admit that. I probably shouldn't have admitted half the things in this video. And I also shouldn't be doing this meta thing of like, ooh, I shouldn't be doing this. That means that I'm like some kind of, you know, cutting edge kind of guy, you know, who does things that no one else would dare do, which is the impression that doing that sort of thing does. And I don't like all these forms of manipulation that people do. It's the same way that people go like, oh, 93% of you aren't subscribed, so please can you hit the YouTube subscribe button and hit the bell notifications. It's like, it's just that, but it's more subconscious and almost insidious as a result of that. But sometimes I find myself just doing it by accident. So I don't know. I feel like as I've gotten to the point now, because this channel is nearly at 10,000 subscribers, so I'm starting to understand why various YouTubers do what they do. And I've kind of realized that they're real people. Like, you look at them and like, you know, you obviously know that they're a real person, but you don't recognize like what they do when they turn the camera off. Like, obviously I don't know what Captain Sparkles does when he turns the camera off. Like, maybe he goes and makes himself a peanut butter and jam sandwich, or maybe he goes down to the bar and gets pissed. I don't know. That wasn't like an accusation, by the way. Also, sorry if I like said something mean about him there, because I don't actually know fucking anything about him. He was just the first YouTuber that came to mind, because I used to really like him when I was like 12. Because when he did the Minecraft videos, like, now I think he does like more reaction stuff. But anyway, yeah, I just kind of wanted to make this video because like it's very difficult to figure out why I'm doing this, because like at the moment it's very easy to turn it into autopilot and just like pump videos after videos out, and it's very important. Like if you're working on content stuff at the moment, films and things like that, you might have written a list of various videos you need to make and side bits of content. Don't do that. Just make each thing as it goes, because you can't do things that way. You can't factorize it, because the audience can tell. And I think I notice like when they respond to a certain video that I've done as if like, yeah, you're just shitting one out here, to like pack it in and give us something that we actually want. That's why like it's important to just like, sometimes I go out and film like 6 of these videos and it feels like a factory churning stuff out. Sometimes I go and I film 1 or 2, and those 1 or 2 are really down from the heart, but they don't necessarily do super well on the algorithm. Sometimes one that is just like a load of crap that I've churned out does do really well on the algorithm, and people can't tell the difference between what I consider a good video and what I consider a bad video, because you know the death of the artist is real. What I think of these things is matters not, right? What you think about these things does. What your friends think about them do. Do they think, oh, he's that guy that likes those bloody Johnny Mozza videos, or that bloody tool twat that talks into a microphone about nothing, you know? Or maybe there's someone else who really likes it and sees like some kind of philosophy in it. Like I've gotten into Dream Theater lately. I, for the longest time, saw nothing in Dream Theater. I didn't understand why anyone would like it. But now it's clicked for me and I get why people like it. Maybe it's the same with these videos. Maybe people have clicked with it somewhat in some capacity and I don't necessarily understand why or how. And maybe the act of trying to harness that in and of itself is some form of selling out and manipulation. I don't know. But then talking about it all doesn't necessarily immediately rectify that and make it all wholesome again either. Like, it's ever since it got monetized, this channel got monetized, now there's money behind it, right? Now I'm just another one of those fucking, like people out there that does things for money. I noticed, actually, I did a video about advertising, and what was weird is I started talking about Prime, Amazon Prime, and how it's, like, a really good product or whatever, and it's all right. But then I realized, hang on, I've got an Amazon affiliate link in the bottom of this. Isn't that the most sellout thing ever? Like, that's fucking foul. Right, and like if I saw that from another YouTuber, I'd be like, ugh, fuck's sake. So I am now my own worst enemy in a way, but like I need the Amazon affiliate link there, because if I make a sale on that, that's like a tidy £2.50. So say if you times that by 100, like that's pretty good. Say if it's even £2.50 per day, if I manage to increase the channel to that kind of capacity, that's my bus fare to and from work sorted, you know? Like, I don't think about things in like a big, like lofty sense. I'm not materialistic, but I do just want to make a nice like amount for, just to have like even like a, you know, 3-bedroom flat for me and my girlfriend. That'd be nice. That's all I want really. That and like a, I don't know, a Toyota Prius Max. I don't want some like fancy car. I never understood the point of wanting a Lamborghini or anything like that. And I know like I'm getting above my station here, like saying, ooh, you know, but I don't know. It's something that I've had to kind of grapple with, the idea of like, what if I become my own worst enemy? What if like all the other YouTubers that started off so sweet and innocent and then became dickheads, what if that same fate comes to me? Because all of those people weren't stupid. They were intelligent people, and they still are intelligent people. They know what they're doing, which means that their acts of selling out means that they are bad people inherently. What if I do the same thing? And then people in the comments will go, oh, you would never do that. But then, fuck, you'd all have egg on your face if I sold out, wouldn't you? Like, I don't quite know. But I do find it interesting to discuss these things, because I want to keep an open relationship between me and you, the audience. As in, I want you to understand what this operation is, kind of how it works, and that way you can judge for yourself whether an act that I do is selling out or not. And if I do start selling out, I want to be called out on it, please, because like, you know, I haven't been offered any sponsorships yet, but I'm not against the idea of taking sponsorships. Like, imagine at the end of this video was sponsored by Grass. don't you all want, and I have to do it in don't you all like to eat grass? This bit of grass has some purple on the end. I think a vegetable was growing out of this. It could have been an onion. Someone was eating an onion and sat on this thing, and then they threw it away, littering. So get your grass now, 50% off at the garden centre, right? Imagine every video had to end like that. Wouldn't you, you skip them anyway. And there's this add-on that I've got on Chrome. I can't remember what it's called. But basically, it makes it so that the community of YouTube viewers can select when a sponsorship is, and it will just automatically skip it when it gets to that point. It can be a little bit jarring, actually. I think it should come up with a skip this sponsorship button, the same way that you've got to skip this ad button. Which at the same time, I don't actually understand why they've got a skip ad button. I've noticed what they've done recently is instead of having the 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 countdown, now they have a yellow bar that leads you to the countdown. I think they're doing that so that they can make the countdown bigger. So now it doesn't show 5 seconds. Now it could be 12 seconds or 8 seconds for skipping the ad. And that will only increase with time as they slowly nickel and dime you know? So I don't know. This video is a bit all over the place, and I do apologize for that. And I know it's sort of, maybe it's a little bit I don't know, just someone that's talking about issues that don't really exist, that aren't relatable to you. But, you know, if you're a video guy or a creative, this same thing could happen to you. You might do something that just blows up on the algorithm and then find yourself trying to keep that momentum going and grappling with how you're going to make that happen. And I don't know, there's a few subscribers of mine that have 20, 30, 40,000 subscribers. I'd like to hear from all of you about how you managed to grapple with this and managed to stay humble while so many people would say you're an inspiration. That's another, I get so many comments about that. And it's hard for me to try and wrestle with that and try and figure out how to be a humble person still, because that's what they want. And the fact that I'm getting so many comments saying I'm an inspiration makes me not big-headed, but it gives me an ego boost. And what if I become dependent on the ego boost? What if this channel only lasts another 2 months, you know, and then I'm back down to nothing? Would I crash and burn mentally because of that? Because I've gotten so accustomed to the praise? I don't know. I really don't know. And they're all, I know it's all a little bit I don't know, guy with a Lamborghini complains about the petrol or price or some shit like that. I don't know. You kind of get my point. It's not relatable to you, this what I'm discussing here. But I feel like it is an insight into what all your favorite YouTubers kind of think about. And as they get bigger, there'll be more issues to wrestle with. And as I get bigger, if I get to say 1 million subscribers, I'd love to do a video about this same topic from that perspective, because I feel there's not enough discussion on the lives. And I'm not saying it for a pity party or anything like that. Don't feel sorry for these guys with all these subscribers, because they're monetizing you fucks for every penny you're worth, with the advertising, with the sponsorship deals, with the Patreons, with the, I don't know, the donation box, with their products and merch drops and shit that they do, all this various stuff. It's, you know, they're not innocent or anything like that. They don't deserve your sympathy. But I do think it's interesting to at least understand what's going on so that you can be more intelligent with regards to how you consume media. So, yeah, I think that's going to be the video. Thank you very much for watching this one and listen to me basically talk about how, you know, my first world problems, really. Well, my zeroth world problems at this point. Yeah, so thank you for listening to that. Hope you have a good rest of the day. And I hope you do blow up on the algorithm, because I'm just a normal guy. I know every YouTuber probably says that, but I'm not anything special, you know? I don't have friends in high places. I have a friend who has who when I met him had 7,000 subscribers. And I had another friend who, when I met him, had 60 subscribers. But then he got big. He didn't get big, but he got two videos that cracked 1 million views, and then he got to 17,000 subscribers. He's one of my best. They're both actually some of my best mates. But they're not big YouTubers. They don't make insane levels of money off it or anything. They're not driving around in Porsche 911s or anything like that. Yeah. So that's the point I'm making. I'm not from some high lofty place. But, you know, I don't know. I don't really know. But thank you very much for watching this video. I know it kind of pitted out, whatever the phrase is. Sorry about the constant patting. There's a game of tennis going on over there. I'll rotate the video so you can see. Hang on. Let me show you. and we can like close out the video with us. Yeah, so, yeah, thank you very much for watching, everybody. Bye. Bye.